Anyway, it's fair to say that the Easter story is a bit of a roller coaster. Not the kind you take your kids to at Disney, where you know what's going to happen around each turn. You're going to have a lovely time, you can eat your sandwiches, and you're going to get a nice photo at the end. It's a type where it gets your heart beating fast, and you don't really know what's going to be around each corner. You don't even know if you're going to make it to the end at all. The disciples have been following Jesus for a few years, and all was going well. Then suddenly, things went very wrong. Or so they thought. Jesus had been crucified, and it wasn't something to celebrate. Frankly and literally, it was a bloody awful death. It was painful, it was shameful, and it was normally long. You hung until your legs couldn't support your weight any longer. And the position of your arms, pulled behind you, meant you struggled to breathe until you suffocated. The practice of breaking people's legs wasn't to inflict more pain, but was an act of mercy, to bring on death quicker. Now, Jesus' body had been cut down and laid in a tomb. A large stone had been placed over the entrance. As the authorities were concerned, Jesus' followers would steal his body. Roman guards were keeping watch, and all hope was lost. Saturday must have been a strange day for us when we celebrate Easter. It's the day where we wait. But for them, they didn't know what they were waiting for. They would have woken up the following day and had nothing. No jobs, no homes. They'd left them all behind. Jesus was dead and buried. Could things get any worse? And then came Sunday. John 20, verses 1 to 8 tell us the story. Early on the first day of the week, while it was still dark, Mary Magdalene went to the tomb and saw that the stone had been removed from the entrance. So she came running to Simon Peter and the other disciple. One said, the one Jesus loved, and said, they have taken the Lord out of the tomb, and we don't know where they have put him. So Peter and the other disciple started for the tomb. Both were running, but the other disciple outran Peter and reached the tomb first. He bent over and looked in at the strips of linen lying there, but did not go in. Then Simon Peter came along behind him and went straight into the tomb. He saw the strips of linen lying there, as well as the cloth that had been wrapped around Jesus' head. The cloth was still lying in its place, separate from the linen. Finally, the other disciple who had reached the tomb first also went inside. He saw and believed. They still did not understand from Scripture that Jesus had to rise from the dead. Then the disciples went back to where they were staying. Now Mary stood outside the tomb crying as she wept. She bent over to look into the tomb and saw two angels in white seated where Jesus' body had been, one at the head and the other at the foot. They asked her, "Woman, why are you crying?" "They have taken my Lord away," she said, "and I don't know where they have put him." At this, she turned around and saw Jesus standing there, but she did not realize that it was Jesus. He asked her, "Woman, why are you crying? Who is it you are looking for?" Thinking he was the gardener, she said, "Sir, if you have carried him away, tell me where you have put him, and I will get him." Jesus said to her, "Mary." She turned toward him and cried out in Aramaic, "Rabboni," which means teacher. Jesus said, "Do not hold on to me, for I have not yet ascended to my Father. Go instead to my brothers and tell them, I am ascending to my Father and your Father, to my God and your God." Mary Magdalene went to the disciples with the news, "I have seen the Lord," and she told them that he had said these things to her. So Mary had gone to the tomb with fragrant oils to anoint the body, which was tradition. When she arrived, she found the stone rolled away. Believing in circumstance, she thought Jesus' body had been stolen. Even when she saw him, she didn't recognize him. Jesus was not dead, though. He was risen. The cross wasn't the end. It was the start of hope. And even though all seemed lost, hope shone through. Now, I'm not someone who believes in random or that things just happen. The basis of so many scientific laws support this, particularly the law of cause and effect. So when, just before Easter, a huge fire rips through one of the world's most famous churches, I have to ask myself, was the timing important? Did God want to tell us something? Often when we think of a great church, we think about the structure and not the congregation. If you like, we focus on the adjective and not the noun. Queen Elizabeth I described St. Mary Redcliffe as the most beautiful of English churches. But I'm guessing she was talking about architecture and not the worship. Maybe by allowing the structure to be damaged in Notre Dame, but the altar cross and the crown of thorns to be saved was intentional. Maybe it's to remind us that we need to not visit church at Easter, but to meet Jesus at the cross. In all that destruction, if we focus on the building, all we see is destruction. We see cost, we see hardship and loss. Yet if we focus on the cross, we see life, we see hope, and we see a future. And if you roll that same thinking out to people, it will change your perspective further. On Friday evening, some of you may have seen it as well, there was a television programme where 8 celebrities walked on a pilgrimage to Rome from the edge of Switzerland. It took 15 days of solid walking. Some started with a faith. Some had no faith, and others were in the middle. And one of them, a comedian, stated that he felt left out by religion. Now, it's interesting watching their journey and watching them struggle up and down hills and support each other. But what was amazing is at the very end, when they got to Rome, they then were told that they had a private meeting with the Pope. And he invited them in just for a chat. Now, full of anger, the comedian was ready for an argument. And he said to the Pope that as a gay man, he didn't feel religion had anything for him. He was ready for an argument. And the Pope replied like this. He said, "You, as do many, focus on adjectives. We need to see people as nouns. When we become love, we see people, not adjectives. We give people back their humanity, their dignity." In a post-programme interview, the comedian said, "He arrived as an angry gay and left as a joyful man, defined by his humanity and not his sexuality." In the story of Easter, Mary didn't see Jesus when she looked at him. She thought he was the gardener until he called her by name, Mary. And Jesus calls us all by name, Rod, Adrian, Sam, Helen, Jean, etc., etc. His crucifixion, his suffering, and his glorious resurrection were for us all by name. It's my name that's written in the book of life, not my circumstance. He wants a relationship with you, not someone like you. You just have to decide if you want a relationship with him. His name is Jesus.